zappa dos na casa. Chapa un sugo pinga bingo bongo baka masao. Si tu me trazi yo kama jana na chum.
Ni ei boy sana.
Ech kuyuma wana bisho kwa na gaga kichek kuna vabuma. I wanna know kina kitu kina kipi.
Welcome to CHRY 105.5 FM. You're listening to African Perspectives. African Perspectives seeks to inform our listening audience on news and views from the continent and be a platform for discussion on important issues from the continent. Our focus for this week's show is on the situation in Libya. And you're listening to Habari Ndohiyo by AY, which is Swahili for This Is The News.
Shime ne rudi mkwa mna shine mseme asante. Hamsomi kame na bidi, hamsikila mna diswala. Wala sauti za kalisa, hamsini mnazona nyingi. Safi mna seto kabisa. Hisio kama sinema, wisha watu we mazima. Masha yane rewind, ya kisema doshe mumba. Sipoteze wakati, kitofotishe vikitu. Nachefanya sinimigi, sitaji kundi la watu. Usinite bongo flavor, japo kwa bongo ni yangu. Hata kwa bite kapuka, tapigia michano hiba. Ache kitana changu, mbali na nywele zako. We una rasta hukitaji na kina tufawe zako. Mnaone mamisi kwa komege na kumwagia. Kisa hawa na bongo, labda milioni pomboja.
We shall begin with the headlines from the continent. Most of Libya is out of control of the government and Muammar Gaddafi's grip on power may soon be confined only to the capital, Tripoli. Libya's former interior minister has said the embattled Libyan regime passed out guns to civilian supporters, set up checkpoints and sent out armed patrols, witnesses said in Tripoli. Some of Libya's security forces reportedly have given up the fight. Mustafa Mohamed and Abud Ajlail, Libya's former justice minister, has led the formation of an interim government based in the eastern city of Benghazi. The online edition of the Kurna newspaper reported on Saturday. The eastern region of the oil-rich North African nation is now believed to be largely free of Gaddafi control since the popular uprising began on February 14th. The crackdown has sparked international condemnation. The United States said that it was moving ahead with sanctions against the regime. Barack Obama issued an executive order seizing assets and blocking any property in the U.S. belonging to Gaddafi or his four sons. The official death toll in the violence remains unclear, but Francois Zimeray, France's top human rights official, is said it could be as high as 2,000. The UN Security Council is meeting to consider action against Colonel Gaddafi's government in Libya over its attempt to put down an uprising. A draft resolution calls for an arms embargo, travel ban, and assets freeze. It also proposes referring Colonel Gaddafi to the International Criminal Court for alleged crimes against humanity. Meanwhile, one of Colonel Gaddafi's sons has said the Libyan people have no future if agreement on ending the rebellion is not reached. Much of Libya, especially the east, is now controlled by anti-Gaddafi forces, but the Libyan leader still controls the capital, Tripoli, home to 2 million of the country's 6.5 million population. The Libyan delegation of the UN has sent a letter to the Security Council backing measures to hold to account those responsible for armed attacks on Libyan civilians, including action to the International Criminal Court. Protests in the Arab world have now spread to the Kingdom of Morocco, where thousands of people have taken to the streets in the capital to demand a new constitution. The demonstrators shouted slogans calling for economic opportunity, educational reform, better health services, and help in coping with rising living costs during the march on Sunday. A protest organizer said the turnout of the rally was more than 5,000. Many in the crowd waved Tunisian and Egyptian flags in recognition of the uprisings that toppled the two countries' long-standing rulers. The protest was initiated by a group calling itself February 20 Movement for Change. This has attracted 19,000 followers on the social networking website Facebook. Demonstrations were also planned in Morocco's other main cities, including Marrakesh, the top tourist destination. Tunisia's transitional government has said it will hold elections by mid-July at the latest. The announcement came as tens of thousands of protesters rallied on Friday to demand the resignation of Mohamed Ghannouchi's transitional government set up last month after the ousting of Zine El Abidine Ben Ali, the country's former president. Demonstrators chanted Ghannouchi leave and shame on this government as army helicopters circled above the crowd massed in the Kasbah government quarter, where police estimate that the number of people topped 100,000. Ghannouchi's caretaker government, tasked with leading Tunisia to elections due in about 5 months, has faced regular protests demanding it expel remnants of the old government. Friday was the biggest of several rallies against the transitional authority since the fall of the ruler, Ben Ali. The interim government tasked with organizing the elections already undergone several changes of the protests, but Ghannouchi has remained. He was prime minister for more than a decade under Ben Ali's rule, which Tunisians saw as an oppressive and corrupt regime. Algeria's cabinet has adopted an order to lift a 19-year-old state of emergency in a concession designed to avoid the tide of uprisings sweeping the Arab world. But protesters say that the measure did not go far enough. A draft law approved by the cabinet would repeal the emergency law as soon as it is published in the government's official journal. Ending the emergency powers is one of the demands voiced by opposition groups, which have been staging weekly protests in the Algerian capital that sought to emulate uprisings in Egypt and neighboring Tunisia. The state of emergency was imposed at the beginning of the country's decade-long civil war, which pitted the armed Islamic group GIA against a military-dominated government that refused to abide by the results of a 1991 election. Tens of thousands of people have died in the ensuing conflict. However, in the past few years, the violence has subsided and the government critics have alleged the emergency rules are being used to repress political freedoms. The emergency rules ban protest marches in the capital, but Bouteflika said earlier this month this restriction will remain in force indefinitely. The other measures adopted by the government focus on tackling unemployment, which official figures put about 10%, but is much higher among the young. Egyptian police have detained the former information minister and state broadcasting chief as part of an anti-corruption probe following the ousting of President Hosni Mubarak. The move comes a day after three other officials appear in court on charges of money laundering and abuse of power. Meanwhile, Egypt's new cabinet met for the first time amid criticism that key Mubarak-era figures were not replaced. Armed groups controlling northern Cote d'Ivoire claim they have seized a town in a government territory and are heading south, raising the prospects of a return to civil war. The fresh violence followed another night of clashes in the country's main city of Abidjan between forces loyal to Laurent Gbagbo, the incumbent president, and the opponents who say he lost an election in November. The UN and foreign governments have demanded that Gbagbo hand power to rival Alassane Ouattara, widely seen as the winner of the contest. There are also reports of gunfire in the capital. The increasing deadly tussle for control of the once prosperous state is the outcome of an election that was supposed to reunite it after a 2002-2003 war, but has simply worsened divisions. Well over 300 people have died in suppressed street protests and armed clashes since the power struggle began. The economy has also ground to a halt as sanctions aimed at squeezing Gbagbo from power have hit ports and the cocoa industry. Senegal has cut diplomatic ties with Iran, accusing Tehran of supplying weapons to separatist rebels in its southern Casamance region. The statement linked the Iranian weapons with an attack on Sunday in Casamance, the latest in a string of such attacks by rebels engaging in one of Africa's longest-running conflicts, which resulted in the deaths of three Senegalese troops. The row is the latest in a spate of diplomatic upsets between Iran and West African nations over alleged arms smuggling that has damaged the Iranian government's search for trade partners on the continent. In December, Senegal recalled its ambassador to Iran, saying the government of the West African country was unsatisfied with explanations given by Iranian officials over a seizure of mortars and rockets in Nigeria. Neighboring Gambia has also cut ties with Tehran over the arms shipment. At least 36 people have been killed in an overnight stampede at a stadium in Bamako, Mali's capital. Thousands of people had gathered at the Modibo Keita Stadium to listen to a Muslim preacher who was speaking as part of the Muslim festival of Maulud when the stampede started. According to the head of emergency services at the city's Gabriel Touré Hospital, at least 64 people were wounded in Monday's incident, five of whom were in serious condition. There was no official explanation for the stampede, but one witness told the Reuters news agency it started when people surged forwards to touch the preacher for good luck. Meanwhile, other reports say the incident occurred as tens of thousands of people were attempting to leave through a metallic enclosure. An official involved in the organization of the event said nearly all those killed were women. A court in the Democratic Republic of Congo has sentenced an army colonel to 20 years in prison, convicting him of crimes against humanity in the most prominent sexual violence case ever held in the country, where thousands are brutally raped. The mobile court held in the lakeside village of Baraka on Monday marks the first time that a commanding officer has been tried for such a crime. Prosecutors had sought the death penalty for Lieutenant Colonel Mutuare Daniel Kibibi, 46 years of age, who was accused of ordering his troops on New Year's Day to attack the village of Fizi, where doctors later treated 62 women for rape. One woman testified that Kibibi himself raped her for 40 minutes. Kibibi was convicted of 4 counts of crime against humanity but will serve no more than 20 years in prison. 3 of his officers received the same sentences and 5 others got lesser sentences. One man was acquitted and another, a minor, will be tried in juvenile court. Kibibi, who is married with 8 children, denies all the charges and says the court testimony by his bodyguards was all part of a plot to denigrate him. A suicide car bomb attack on a government security base in Mogadishu, Somalia's capital, has killed at least 8 people and wounded scores of others. The station targeted in Monday's attacks were being used as a training station for government troops. Police said there were likely to be more casualties since fragments of the bomb, shrapnel, and wrecked car parts were flung across the road into various buildings and houses. Sheikh Ali Mahmoud Rage, the spokesman for Al-Shabaab, claimed responsibility for the attack and said it was aimed at soldiers who were preparing to attack them. Uganda's main opposition leader, Kizza Besigye, has called for peaceful protests against the outcome of the recent general election. Incumbent Yoweri Museveni won the presidential poll with 68% of the vote, but Dr. Besigye said both the presidential and parliamentary votes were a sham, with ballot stuffing and intimidation. His protest call came a day after the Electoral Commission postponed the mayoral election in the capital because of the alleged vote rigging. A senior member of the commission said he had found evidence of ballot box stuffing when he visited several polling stations in Kampala. The success of the African Nations Championship, CHAN, means Sudan is ready to host the Nations Cup, according to the country's FA. The 16-team tournament for locally based players only finished on Friday, when Tunisia beat Angola 3-0 in the final. It was the first major tournament that Sudan has hosted since 1970. The low point of the tournament was the violence which marred the semi-final between the host and Angola. Sudan lost the game and fans responded, both during and after the match, by throwing rocks and bottles on the pitch. News from the continent is credited to Pambazuka News, the BBC and Al Jazeera. Today we shall be talking to Professor Horace Campbell, a prominent academic from Syracuse University in New York, on the protests in Libya and Colonel Muammar Gaddafi's brutal attack on the Libyan people. You will hear him as soon as we come back from the break. Now you will hear a song called January 25th. January 25th is a song inspired by the resilience of Egyptian people during their recent uprising. Several notable musicians from North America have teamed up to release a song of solidarity and empowerment. The track is fittingly titled January 25th as a reference to both the dates of the protests that officially began in Egypt and its prominence as a trending topic on Twitter. Produced by Sami Matar, a Palestinian-American composer from Southern California, and featuring the likes of Freeway, The Narcissist, Omar Offendom, HBO deaf poet Amir Suleiman, and Canadian R&B vocalist Aya.
Heard him say the revolution won't be televised. Al Jazeera proved him wrong. Twitter has him paralyzed. 80 million strong and ain't no longer gonna be terrorized. Organized, mobilized, vocalized. On the side of truth, the Madunya's living proof that it's a matter of time for the chickens home to roost. Bu Azizi lit the poof. And it slowly ignited the fire within every people to fight it. From Tunis to Khan Yunis, the new moon shines bright as the man's spoon was his mask as the man writes in the cell room. It's a disunity communally removing the tumors. Rotten Hakumas. We're making headway, chanting down the dictators, getting rid of dead weight, opening the floodgates like the streets of Jeddah. But whatever the soda, my stuha, whatever we've been empowered to speak, and though the future is uncertain, man, at least it isn't bleak. When our children can be raised not in a cage, but on a peak, the inheritors of Mother Earth are meek. Freedom isn't given by oppressors, it's demanded by oppressed. Freedom lovers, freedom fighters, free to gather and protest for the God-given rights, for the freedom of the press. We know freedom is the answer. The only question is, who's next?
It's very bad for my government. I haven't food, I haven't anything. Me and my children, I will die today.
Time to push, and we ain't calling back now. Time to fight, if we are all we have now. Do you hear me calling out for battles? Try to keep a lookout for better days. Time to push, and we ain't calling back now.
To be born, news media. media disseminated, heaven's gate level of alarm. Third person dictate, couldn't sever him till dawn. 3 mil in the street, we will live in peace. But first, God rest the soul of those who choose to be free. From poverty they rose, knee deep in robbery. Souls will plummet and burn like Muhammad Waziz. And just be it a low ghost, deliver the state now, here's his own soul. Karma waits for no man. Your presidential charm and armor break out of place in your own homeland. Now hip like Meza, imagine a million human march to Gaza. From Qahira to Baghdad, siyaset hum sahira, alamat al-akhira.
Time to push, we ain't calling back now. Time to fight, we are all we have now. Do you hear? They're calling out for battles, trying to keep a lookout for better days. Time to push, we ain't calling back now. Time to fight, we are all we have now. Do you hear? They're calling out for battles, trying to keep a lookout for better days.
And that's where the beat ends. You should learn a lesson from oppression where it begins. White, yellow, it don't matter what race. Before you break us, you gon' push us off the deep end. Different countries, same struggle, we even. Got to play no squeezing when our kids ain't eating. Only up a difference is it's hot all year round there. Wintertime and your kids ain't freezing. But we all starving, all grieving. And the people with the power ain't got heart enough to feed us. I follow the procedures and I study my Quran. This is modern day science, we just waiting on Jesus. You should be the teacher of Quran to your kids instead of wasting time watching Kelly Ripa and Regis. This is Egypt, home of the ruins. Last time we needed change, it took Musa to move on. Operation, get rid of the Pharaoh. Now we getting rid of who ain't willing to share no bread with the people. We are all equal. True men of God, fear God, don't fear no person that's walking on the face of the earth. If you got a tank, knife, gun, bow, or an arrow. Long as there's breath, then there's still hope left. So let hope rise like the eye of a sparrow.
Time to push, we ain't falling back now.
Niggas won't be just spicks. A-Raps, Packies, Rednecks, and Hicks. Leaders ain't helping them feeding the kids. The leaders helping pigs eating the kids. Back on my Elijah, eating the liver. Run up in the White House with keys to the crib. The House and the Senate, ousted in a minute. Take these streets to Wall Street, this one's for Kenneth.
Thank you for staying tuned. If you are, we have Horace Campbell on the phone. Hello, Professor Campbell.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm here sitting in Brooklyn. We're going to have a session on Pan-Africanism today at the Brooklyn Public Library.
Oh, that's great.
So, in fact, I just landed from Nairobi, where I was speaking about my book on Barack Obama's 21st century politics and about the prospects for revolution in Eastern Africa.
Wonderful. I'm going to give a short introduction to Professor Horace Campbell. Professor Horace Campbell is a professor of African-American studies and political science at Syracuse University in New York. He is a noted Pan-African scholar and writer. From his years in Toronto, Canada, to his journeys in Africa, all the way to Uganda, Tanzania, and Zimbabwe, the United Kingdom, and Caribbean, he has been an influential force offering alternatives to the hegemonic ideas of Eurocentrism. Dr. Campbell is a veteran peace activist. He serves on the advisory board of the Syracuse Peace Council, the oldest peace organization in the U.S., He is also the president of the Pan-African Community of Central New York. As a peace activist, Dr. Campbell is actively involved in the opposition against the establishment of the U.S. Africa Command. While at the University of Dar es Salaam, he was the secretary of the Liberation Support Committee and was a very active scholar, teacher in Tanzania. As a member of the Dar es Salaam School, he was active in debates on the transition beyond colonialism. He has also served on various academic committees at the University of Dar es Salaam. Dr. Campbell was educated in the Caribbean, Canada, Uganda, and United Kingdom. He did his doctoral work at Sussex University in the United Kingdom. The title of his thesis was The Commander State in Uganda. Since 1979, he has been studying issues of militarism and transformation in Africa. So, Professor Campbell, we're going to start with the basics. Can you give us a brief overview of what triggered the protests in Libya?
Well, I would think that from what we understand, Libya, for the past 42 years, has been a police state. and the Libyan people did not enjoy basic freedoms. That is freedom of assembly, freedom of speech, freedom of movement. And although Libya was a very rich country, producing billions of dollars of hydrocarbons, the Libyan leader had manipulated the ideas of revolution and squandered the wealth of the country, so that it was a situation where the capitalist system was not working for the people of Libya, just as though the capitalist system was not working for the people of Egypt or working for the people of Tunisia. But as you know, in Tunisia and Egypt, unemployed youth, workers, women, religious leaders came out to oppose dictatorship. In the case of Tunisia, the 23-year-old dictatorship of Ben Ali. In the case of Egypt, the 30-year-old dictatorship of Hosni Mubarak. So these rebellions in Tunisia, Egypt, and in Libya, they took on a revolutionary character. But in the cases of Tunisia and the case of Egypt, the revolutionary character changed into revolutionary forms insofar as the self-organization, the self-mobilization, and the character of the political ideas in the Egyptian and the Tunisian revolution led the people to victory. The situation is less clear in Libya, where Libyan leaders distorted ideas of revolution, revolutionary committees, so that the fact that Libya represented itself as a leader of the African Union led to some antagonisms in Libya in relationship to the ideas about African revolution. And so this confusion means that Gaddafi is using mercenaries. And by using mercenaries, it is very important that within the Pan-African world, we're clear what the issues are in Libya. The issues are the Libyan people want a new form of government where they have basic rights, and that Libya is a country in Africa. Libya is not a European country. Some of the people in Libya might call themselves Arab, but Libya is an African country.
So what do you think was the final push for the Libyan people to come out on the streets? Was it the fellow revolutions?
From what I have read and from what I've seen, the Libyan people have been waiting for a spark. And the spark which gave the people of Libya confidence was the spark of Tunisia and Egypt. In fact, it is the Tunisian process that has been the most illuminating, because it gave confidence to people all over the region of the Middle East. And as many writers have said, once the people gained confidence in Egypt and Tunisia, it gave inspiration to people all over the Middle East and Africa. So what we are seeing in the Middle East and North Africa is a renewed confidence of people with the consciousness that they can make political change and they can change their societies.
And how did Colonel Gaddafi, who was a leading African figure in the call against Western imperialism and a strong advocate of Pan-Africanism, manage to become a ruthless brute massacring his own people to maintain power?
This is not new. This is not new, and he's not unique. We should say from the outset that as Pan-Africanists, as progressive Pan-Africanists, we condemn the activities of Gaddafi in massacring his own people. Secondly, we know that Libya, under Gaddafi, supported Idi Amin 30 years ago, 32 years ago when Uganda attacked Tanzania to divert attention for the liberation processes in southern Africa. Libya provided troops for Idi Amin, and Libya has been supporting dictators of Africa, supported militarists such as Charles Taylor, Fodi Sanko, support Museveni in Uganda, support Mugabe. So this distortion of revolutionary principles by Gaddafi is not new. What is necessary, what has been required, is for progressive Pan-Africanists to clarify the difference between Pan-Africanism from below that is the Pan-Africanism of the grassroots, of the youth, women and workers, and Pan-Africanism of leaders that manipulate the ideas of Pan-Africanism in order to get legitimacy. And Gaddafi is a supreme example of someone who would think if they could have bought the Pan-African leadership of the African Union because of the momentum about African freedom that is coming from the grassroots. And we have seen that Pan-Africanists today have to raise their voices to the fact that African leaders could select someone like Obiang from Equatorial Guinea, the worst dictator in Africa, the chairperson of the African Union. The fact that Obiang is now the chairperson of the African Union is a good example of the kind of club of dictators that we see in the African Union at the level of leadership. And this leadership, like Mugabe, Obiang, and Gaddafi, they've distorted Pan-Africanism to the point that it has discredited Pan-Africanism in some circles. This requires greater clarity among progressive Pan-Africanists what Pan-Africanism means today.
Most of the armed military that have gone against Gaddafi, military planes have defected and landed in Malta. Many police officers have either joined the protest or handed their weapons to the protesters. What else can the military do? What else can the military do? Is their role as critical as the military was in Egypt?
The most important thing the military should do at this point is to work with the other military officers that are serving Gaddafi so that we end this bloodshed and shooting of innocent people in streets. The beautiful thing about the Egyptian revolution is that it was nonviolent and it neutralized the military. There, what I heard on Al Jazeera this morning was that up to now, only 15% of the military continues to support Gaddafi. That other 85% of the military that's on the side of the people must work harder to ensure that Gaddafi is neutralized, his sons are neutralized, and they are in no position to continue to employ mercenaries to ordinary Libyans.
The Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan and many protesters in Libya claim that the only reason that the international community have finally become involved in condemning Libya, Gaddafi, is because of the rising oil prices in the market. To what degree does the oil factor play in Western powers' attitude towards Libya and in international relations?
Well, oil plays a very big role because Libya is a major producer of oil after Angola and Nigeria. It's probably the third most important producer of oil in Africa. But the Western leaders are hypocritical because the same Western leaders who criticize Gaddafi are the same Western leaders who sold weapons to Gaddafi. We must not focus on the Western leaders. We must focus on our task as Pan-Africanists. In Toronto, in the United States, in Europe, the Libyan community must intensify its relationship with the progressive Pan-African groups. We must translate the writings on Pambazuka into Arabic, and we must open engagement that this cleavage that is happening between the African people from sub-Saharan Africa and the African people from Libya, that we find a way to bridge that gap that has been exploited and manipulated by Gaddafi.
The sanctions that have been imposed on Libya, do you think that's the best route the international community can take in response to Gaddafi's crackdown on the protesters? Because many people
I don't know about international community. What is called international community usually is a pseudonym for imperialism. What we need is to find ways to support the Libyan peoples. We have to find ways to isolate Gaddafi. We have to find ways of communicating with the people inside of Libya and to communicate with those sections of the armed forces that are still with Gaddafi. So the international community is hypocritical. They do not have the interests of the Libyan people at heart. They have interests of oil company and the billions of dollars that Gaddafi have in foreign reserves, up to $150 billion in foreign reserves. That's what their interest. They're not interested in the people of Libya. And what is our interest is that the lessons of the revolution in Egypt, how the people consolidated their communities, how the people developed communities that were democratically run, how the people ended sectarian differences between Christians and Muslims, how the people brought young and old, workers and students together. We should look at the positive lessons from Egypt so that we can help to strengthen the Libyan process.
Just to add on to your note about the hypocrisy of the international community, actually in terms of relations with Latin America, Hugo Chavez of Venezuela has remained ambiguous about Gaddafi. Castro calls for a more critical look into the protests, and Daniel Ortega, the leftist president of Nicaragua, has showed support for Gaddafi. And I just found it very contradictory how the leftist regimes remain either ambivalent or are holding back, while the more conservative governments like France, Britain, and the States seem to have clear statements about Gaddafi.
Well, you see, this is a real problem in the progressive world, because Hugo Chavez and the Latin American revolutionaries see Gaddafi as a revolutionary. And this is the same problem we have in the progressive Pan-African movement, where there are some progressive Pan-Africanists who see Mugabe as a revolutionary. This is one of the reasons why our work, your work as a journalist, my work as a scholar, our work as progressive Pan-Africanists must be to clarify to the Venezuelan people the fact that Gaddafi was no revolutionary and he was running a police state.
Libya has a long history of racial tensions between Africans and Arabs, and it seems that the media's use of the term African mercenaries not only accentuates the difference between North and Sub-Saharan Africa, but also implies the lack of a black Libyan presence on the front lines of these protests. What is your take on the mercenaries?
This is not new. You know, Gaddafi himself was working with Italy to hand over African migrants who wanted to cross the Sahara. So Gaddafi worked in tandem with the European Union to prevent Africans from moving freely. And it is the same Gaddafi that went into Africa and wanted to become the first president of the African Union. This is the kind of manipulation that has gone on for the past 20 years by Gaddafi. After Mandela rescued Gaddafi from obscurity over the Lockerbie issue. And this Libyan situation is very delicate when it comes to the relationship between Africans and those in North Africa who are called Arabs. Because some of the people who call themselves Arabs take on ideas of superiority over other Africans. And this political work that will be necessary in the next period is going to be very, very demanding to clarify what the real issues are in Africa. And those people who see themselves as Arabs have to look back on the history of the Arab slave trade and to see if they're going towards revolution. Can they go towards revolution with the kind of ideas of chauvinism and racism that came out of the Arab slave trade? So if we want revolution in Egypt, Libya and Tunisia, revolution is not only about changing government, it's about changing ideas about society.
What would be the next step for Libya if Gaddafi did step down or was forced out of power, which seems like the only way?
Gaddafi must step. Gaddafi must step down. Yeah. The next step for Libya is for the Libyan people to organize themselves in the kind of organizations that can bring about real democratic participation at the grassroots by new forms of politics, not just about elections, but new forms of politics in North Africa.
And as you said earlier, that the important fact of the revolution is a change of ideas. So would you like to make any comment on the neoliberalism that's happening right now, that these states are practicing, which seems to be the root cause behind the creation of these dictators, that is a conflation of politics and business?
Let's not beat around the bush and call it neoliberalism. Let's call it capitalism, a capitalist mode of production, one that exploits people. Where a leader like Mubarak can have $70 billion, or leaders like Gaddafi and his sons can have billions of dollars, while the mass of the people are poor, unemployed, having no future. That form of economic organization is the root cause of the rebellion in North Africa, in Yemen, in Bahrain, in Djibouti, in all parts of Africa. And we have to make it clear that what is called neoliberalism, privatization, liberalization, and opening up the economy, is a form of economic organization that concentrates wealth in the financial sector. It is a sector that is non-productive. It's a sector that bleeds working people. And we on the left have to put this at the forefront of what is happening. Yes. So neoliberalism does not provide for health for workers, for water, for housing, for electricity, for jobs. And so we need to talk about how to restructure the society to a different kind of society.
So this is a revolution against capitalism. It's not just a revolution against individual presidents or dictators.
Precisely. Precisely. In other words, the system would not change in Egypt, Tunisia, if you change one good person for another person. It's like in the United States, where people believe that by electing Barack Obama, they would change the system. Electing Barack Obama may have made people feel good about American society, but American capitalism is still destroying the environment, is still involving Iraq and Afghanistan, and Wall Street is still plundering the planet Earth.
Thank you so much, Professor Campbell. Just correct me if I'm wrong, but if you would like to get in touch with Professor Campbell, you can visit his blogspot, www.horacecampbell.net. Is that correct?
That's right.
That's right.
That's right. And they can see Pambazooka News to get the most up-to-date information on the Pan-African Revolution today.
Yes, please visit pambazookanews.org to receive information about critical analysis of Libya and the other revolutions that are going on right now. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to add, Professor Campbell, to today's discussion on Libya?
Yes, I'd like to send greetings to all my friends and comrades. I spent a long time in Toronto, and I don't know that Toronto is got a very strong presence of left and progressive forces working for fair trade, work against neoliberalism, work for environmental change in Africa. But we have to bring many of these communities together, because while they're in Canada, they look at home and do not fight against racism and police brutality in Toronto that is so strong in that city. So I want to give greetings to all my brothers and sisters in Toronto who are continuing the fight for peace and justice in Canada.
Thank you so much, Professor Campbell. I'm sure they heard that. And just yesterday, there was a protest downtown in support of the Libyan revolution.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time, and we hope to hear you again on the show.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Welcome back to CHRY 105.5 FM. You are listening to African Perspectives. I'm your host today, Amal Shivji. We were just talking to Professor Horace Campbell from New York, and he told us the way forward for the Libyan people is a revolution against capitalism. That is what it is, and Colonel Muammar Gaddafi needs to be stepped down, preferably by force, because he is not giving up power. The latest on Libya is that reports are coming in the UK has revoked Gaddafi's diplomatic immunity, putting pressure on the Libyan leader to step down. Officials say the move was an unprecedented step by Britain against a serving head of state. Once again, as Professor Campbell mentioned, the international community playing very hypocritical is on a very hypocritical role right now, because on one hand, they do not support the Egyptian protests until the very last second, but when it comes to Libya, they're there at the first hand. That is all we have for today. Unfortunately, I will leave you with the song This Is the News by Moana FA and AY, and tune into African Perspectives next week, every Sunday at 12 p.m. Toronto time. Goodbye.